Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So happy to be with you this week. Our guest is MMA veteran and champion Josh Barnett. He's the mastermind behind the Game Changer Wrestling Bloodsport series. Bloodsport 10 is coming to Philadelphia. Penn's Slamming Caterers April 4th. It's available on Triller TV Plus through pay-per-view. Really interesting conversation, because if you want to find a guy who's pretty much like the midpoint of pro wrestling and MMA, a guy who's done both on very high levels in very different places, it's Josh Barnett. You know, his relationship with Billy Robinson, Carl Gotch. It's just a fascinating look behind the scenes, but you don't get totally behind the scenes, because he's going to hold a little bit back from you. So here we go right now with my conversation with Josh Barnett. So honored to be joined by MMA champion and veteran and the mastermind of GCW Bloodsport, which returns with Bloodsport 10 at Penn's Landing Caterers April 4th on Triller TV Plus. Catch wrestling expert, the War Master, Mr. Josh Barnett. Josh, welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. Thanks so much for being here today. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Just a general nice morning in California.
Very good. So Bloodsport is back, and this time, for the first time ever, you have an active WWE competitor on the bill, someone you go back a long way with, Shayna Baszler. She'll be taking on Masha Slamovich, who's probably best known from TNA wrestling. How did this come to be that a WWE wrestler is appearing on Bloodsport?
I guess the easiest way to describe it is just through my relationships with people there. That's really what it comes down to. And with anybody, when speaking of a promotion, you're always going to want to, if you're going to do anything outside of it, you want a certain level of trust and consideration given to you. And it's hard to lend your toys out when there's so much money put into them and the product itself. So in general, you know, of course, we see cross promotion happening out there in the world of wrestling, but it's really a big deal when you think about all the different things involved with it and the value of some of the athletes that are going back and forth. But fortunately, through relationships I've cultivated over the years, something like having Shayna Baszler at GCW Bloodsport it's a reality now. And I'm just super, super happy and honored to be able to do it. And I know that Shayna is going to do fantastic. I should know. I've been training her entire career.
Wow. Wow. And I noticed even in the follow-up social media, it was said, you never know where wrestlers are going to come from on a show like this, WWE, NXT, mm-hmm. Stardom. How much does that excite you, both as a promoter and as a fan, to see this kind of thing? I know that's kind of like what the Japanese wrestling DNA was sort of built on, was crossover and unique styles and fights and that kind of thing.
Well, I do want to bring unique styles, unique matchups with Bloodsport and with the loss of this type of pro wrestling over the years. It gives me an opportunity to even grab people from what may be more active and common viewership to the fans. You know, a wrestler you wouldn't expect to be like, let's say, John Morrison. You know, people mm-hmm. know John for a ton of things, so they've seen him for so many years, and then you see him announced for the first time for Bloodsport, and they're like, what? And then when he gets in the ring, it's like, well, this is something I've never seen out of him. I had no idea he was capable of doing this. And so that aspect always is something that I look forward to. But also the fact of just trying to put these shows together and create something that I know is going to be unique no matter who's on the card, and being able to showcase these wrestlers in a place I feel like strips everything away so you can see exactly who they are. It's not about their gimmicks and their catchphrases or any of this other extraneous stuff that comes with trying to build yourself and your image as a wrestler. It comes down to just you in the ring and what do you have to show to the audience and to your opponent. Now, when I say that you just never know what's going to happen with Bloodsport, and you don't, because there are things that I'm just really fortunate to be able to get access to, and sometimes they pan out, like getting Jon Moxley to compete in our shows, getting people like Kota Ibushi wanting to make his return to professional wrestling in Bloodsport,
right?
And now with Shayna coming and being a part of this upcoming Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 10, I'm always working to try and make these kind of moments happen. Now, it's really difficult, and you have no idea how many people I've tried to get in the ring has not worked out, but I'm going to just continue to build what I think is the best, most interesting cards I can. And, you know, even one small thing that I always wanted to have with these Bloodsport shows is, if you'll note, if you go look back across our events, we have probably more heavyweight wrestlers in our ring than any other indie promotion, by far. Our cards are, you know, we've got a variety of weight classes, and we'll have men and women, but on the regular, you'll even notice that, like, man, I try to put these cards together, especially if I can find guys that are true heavyweights, because they're such a rarity in indie wrestling these days.
Right.
And most guys get picked up by, you know, one of the big companies, but that's what we all grew up with. I mean, when you start looking into the past, and not to slight the juniors and by any means, but when people look back to those old professional wrestling nostalgic moments, it's all heavyweights for the most part.
You mentioned Johnny Bloodsport, Johnny TV, John Morrison, John Hennigan, whatever anybody's going to call him this week. How did that particular match come together? Because you're actually his opponent on this show coming up on April 4th.
Well, he's a professional wrestler, so he's down to get in the ring with whomever and however it's presented to him. And, you know, he's undefeated in Bloodsport. And while people still don't really think of him as like a shoot guy, he's got a collegiate wrestling background. He's an insanely incredible athlete. He's 1-0 in boxing. And I mean, he's proven himself in Bloodsport in his previous matches. You know, he's got what it takes. And it's because he likes to poke and prod and troll and mess with people. And, you know, bring a certain level of comedy and ridiculousness in and around what he's doing in pro wrestling. But don't let that completely blind you to the fact that John is a serious competitor. He's been around as long as he has. He's held titles in every company just about he's been in.
Yep.
So he is a serious, serious contender.
Do you expect more of this type of thing from WWE here and with other promotions? And you mentioned it a little bit, but I was kind of wondering too, like, who else fits naturally into the very unique format that you've got here?
Oh, you mean from people specifically from WWE?
From WWE or really from anywhere? Just
there's a lot of them. There's plenty. Although, you know, who would be available from these companies to come and work the show, it's a different story. And hopefully in time, more of these sort of things can happen. And I'm not sure if people are aware of how many New Japan pro wrestlers have been on Bloodsport shows too.
Right.
And again, that's from my relationship that I've had with New Japan, going all the way back to 2002. Wow. So, you know, before I get to throwing some names out there,
yeah,
I try to create this show as a neutral body, as something that stands alone and apart from all the rest of pro wrestling's politics and ratings wars and so on and so forth. We're not out there thinking about competing with anyone else but ourselves, mm-hmm. and being capable of making the absolute best shows in the spirit of how I am trying to build Bloodsport to be. That's it. And with focusing on that, it helps to keep your eyes forward, but also demonstrate that whether you're New Japan Pro Wrestling or AEW or WWE, I'm not here to get into any competition with them. I'm not here to do anything but to build a place so that wrestlers first and foremost can shine above all. And I think, you know, the more they can have confidence and trust in me maintaining that environment, the more these type of things will happen. And I love giving people opportunity, and that's, you know, a huge reason to do this. So if given the chance to bring other guys in, of course, I've spoken with, he's Malakai Black now, plenty yep. of times about coming into Bloodsport. I've spoken to CM Punk. It would be great to have Chad Gable or Bron Breakker or any number of, people with amateur backgrounds. Charlie Dempsey, he's out there showing catch as catch can. And, yep. He spent the time abroad training for quite some time. And I have actually worked with him over distance for some years prior, just sending videos, going over techniques and having conversations. But honestly, like the kid's doing all his own work because he really wants to be the type of wrestler that you think he is. It's important to him, I can see. But there's a whole wealth of talent out there that could be grabbed. Miro from AEW,
maybe,
maybe someone like him would be a good fit. So there's plenty of talent, but at the end of the day, also, it's not just about what I would want or who I could, get. Like, Bill Goldberg is like family to me. So maybe he'll want to get into Bloodsport. Who knows? But if whoever it is, they also have to really see this ring for what it is and what we've created and say, that is something I got to do. That's me. I want to show myself and shine myself in a place like this. And when you can put those two things together, then who knows what can happen.
Yeah, and it's really it's difficult within the pro wrestling realm, I think, to come up with something that's unique. So it's really going to be sort of the athlete testing themselves in a completely different environment than, like, John Morrison is the best example of that, because it's, it's unlike what you normally the presentation you normally see him in. I have not personally watched a Bloodsport show before. So what do you say to the people who have not?
Where the hell have you been?
I mean, honestly, this shines a light on you guys that you didn't necessarily have before with the WWE.
I would say, one, I mean, it shouldn't have taken this occurrence to get you to tune in. We trend every single time on Twitter in sports when we have our shows. We've gotten tons and tons and tons of press across the, big mainstream outlets to smaller ones, international. It's I realize that this show isn't going to be for everyone, and that's absolutely fine by me. And in fact, it shouldn't be, because I'm not catering to the broadest brushstroke. I'm not catering to anybody other than the concept and the spirit of the thing that lives in my head. Mm-hmm. That's it. So I'm going to build it, and by putting that effort into it with the emphasis on what this show needs to be to me, that's why the product is going to be something that, that comes off as sincere and authentic as it can, which is incredibly difficult to do in any sense. But that's why people tune in. That's why we've had, I think, every single show we've ever done has been sold out. And that's why, since the first show I've done of Bloodsport, people have constantly been picked up by AEW, WWE, NXT, New Japan. People that get in my ring get almost always, after even just one show, you'll see them showing up other places. And it's because we build a ring that can really showcase people in their purest sense, like I said before. But also, I believe we make a great show. I believe our show is highly entertaining, it's easy to watch, and it's not predictable. The only predictable thing is, you know, people are going to get knocked out or submitted, and there may or may not be blood, and you know the hits are going to come hard. I never wanted a show that had the same formulas as everybody else, so people could sit back and not really pay attention until certain moments of a match. Now, people have to be fully invested because you just never know what's going to happen. It's not about people's finishers. It's not about people's catchphrases. It's not about any of that. This is just pure raw wrestling, professional wrestling, and the hardest hitting version of it is at that. And if that's, you know, you want to see people really giving it their all and striving with everything they got, then this is the show for you.
And for me, fortunately, when you make a mistake and you don't check something out, you could always go back and binge all the past ones anyway. So
that's true. Know,
it for me is just, to be honest, there's a lot of stuff out there and there's a lot of options. So it's kind of hard sometimes to, you know, when life gets in the way, pick what you want to do and what you want to watch. So.
Well, sure. And I think that people to some degree are going to, they're going to fall into that, which they already do. That's it's really, really common for most folks. But I can say with what it is that we do, nobody else is doing it. I know there are people out there like, oh, what about this show? No, whatever show is out there that's trying to emulate or copy what we do, it is not the same. If I am not involved in producing the show and putting it together, then no matter how much it's got a ring with no ropes, that people are trying to work a similar style or any of these sort of things, it's not the same. It is just a copy. And I find it flattering that there's a lot of interest enough that people in the wrestling industry think that this can make them money. They see value in it. But and it's not to be egotistical or anything, but I just know that if I'm not the one making it, then who else has the experience with training under Antonio Inoki and Billy Robinson and Carl Gotch, that has the MMA background, that trained and lived in Japan, that's been on the road, that's been with Fujiwara and Maeda and Sakuraba? And nobody. There is nobody, especially in the States, that has that background and that kind of experience. So why would they be able to create what we're doing here? And even then, given the difficulty of not having a home dojo, where let's say 2/3 of the roster are all training at on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was it's a big secret behind like New Japan Pro Wrestling. And especially back in the day with the UWF and rings and these different schools, professional Fujiwara Gumi, they all had a school where they all trained together. And that's why they were able to very quickly start their shows up and have a really high level of matches out there. You know, we don't have a school either. We just, you know, we keep trucking along. We keep working with people as best as possible. But when these matches are out there in the ring, I've had my hand involved in every single aspect of it, because you know, I take it very personally to make this show the best I possibly can. And you can watch the imitations, and that's fine. And I like that people are getting seen out there doing their work. But ultimately, if you want to see what goes on and Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, you can only find it here.
It's the genuine article. So you mentioned him, and I need to ask about him because I'm always fascinated to hear about him, read about him, watch old matches. What was it like to know Billy Robinson? What's the most important thing you learned from him, and what would he have thought of Bloodsport?
I'm sure he would have given me plenty of criticism about Bloodsport because that was just his nature. Koch even more so. But I know that they would be proud of what we're doing here and what we're trying to accomplish and how much further we're trying to take this. Knowing Billy was a delight. He was an amazing man, an amazing coach. He was always there to show me whatever he had for any occasion, any situation, to help me any way that he saw that some improvement could be brought to what I was doing, to show me different ways of thinking about how I'm going about the process out there. And he was just a massive wealth of knowledge and experience, a fantastic coach, who was truly and incredibly passionate about what he did and what he was teaching. And I just feel incredibly fortunate to have been able to have had him for a coach for the many years that I did. There's people out there that got a chance to, you know, maybe take some seminars of his and all that back here in the States. But I lived in Japan and I would train under Billy on a regular basis. I was there training under him for, God, probably like, I guess it must have been close to 7 years.
Wow.
And what he has shown me lives on through what I teach others, through Bloodsport, through Shayna, through Tim Thatcher. And I just really want to do things that, in a sense, keep people like Inoki and Billy and Carl alive, because they were so important to me. I think it's not even an argument that how important they were to professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know any better way to honor your mentors than to do something like this.
You mentioned it a little bit before with the heavyweights. What did your pro wrestling fandom look like, and how fascinated are you by the sort of blurry line between shoot and work shoot, or whatever we call anything, you know, because it's you seem like you're kind of the midpoint of pro wrestling and MMA. Like you understand both really well.
What do you mean by what did the fan base, do you mean my specific
fan base? What did your fandom look like? Yeah. When you first got interested in pro wrestling and kind of,
I think that, back then there were some hard lines between MMA fans and pro wrestling fans, but because what I was doing was in Japan, those that were Japanese pro wrestling fans abroad understood and were interested. And the fans in Japan, of course, were totally on board. And to them, I think that they saw with things I had said and done in leading into starting or leading into being a professional wrestler full time. And, prior to even my first match, they're like, okay, this guy, we can see that he knows pro wrestling, that he's a legitimate fan. He's not just an MMA guy who thinks this might be an opportunity to get an easy buck or something like that. Because I've seen it in the past where you will see MMA guys advertised to be a part of somebody's show. And you can see when they get in the ring that they don't really have any idea what's in store for them. And they just look completely and utterly out of water, like a fish out of water in there. So that was never my intention. You know, my position was to, if I'm a pro wrestler, I'm a pro wrestler. And I've always kind of viewed MMA as just one side of the coin of professional wrestling. I forgot, what was your other question?
It was kind of the blurry line between shoot and work shoot.
That's the way it's supposed to be. The way it's supposed to be. If it's not that way, then I think you're doing it wrong. It should be a blurry line. Nothing should ever be explicit to such a degree that the mystery is taken away from the fans. Of course, the fans want to know everything. They want to know the backstage. You want to know this. They want to know whether the move was botched or not, or all this kind of crap. I pride myself on telling them nothing other than what I feel like they need to know, because that desire, that thirst for to be able to see behind the curtain and to have a camera on the mat in the magician's hands while he's doing the illusions, I get it. But ultimately, it's a desire that eventually ruins the ability to live in the magic of the moment of these events. And I know, as much as marks want to be smart, it's actually better for us, and I say us, to be dumb, so to speak. And this is why when me and JR, me and Mauro were doing New Japan, we didn't want to know the results. We didn't want to watch a match ahead of time. We just wanted to feel it and watch it and be there in it. When I'm at shows, I don't ask. I don't want to know who's going over. I'm not interested unless it's a deliberate, you know, unless it's blood sport and I have to know, then I'm not interested. I want to be someone who can be there and let whatever is being done in that ring be presented to me sincerely and without me trying to deconstruct it or overly analyze it. I just want to allow myself to feel it, to see it and experience it, because pro wrestling is not about moves. It's about emotions. And we need to bring a story out there in the ring. We need to show something that brings an emotional response out of the fans, something that sits in them, because people don't remember what they watch. They remember what they feel. And yeah, that is the goal. So the lines will forever and always be blurred. Our guys are not supposed to talk about after matches. No, don't break it down. Don't get literal with it. Leave it in the air. And every time we have a show, people will comment, and I see it online, tons of comments. Hey, and then that guy got hardwayed, or I think that actually turned into a real one, or this. And you know what? I'm never going to tell them, because there's no point. There's no point. It's a lot like Cody taking a chair shot way back when in AEW. And then everyone's like, oh my God, that was an unprotected chair shot. Then everybody started freaking out and telling everyone how it was a trick chair and how it's supposed to be. It just ruined it. Just blew the whole. The thing is, everybody's concern about Cody getting hit. Well, you know, we can talk about when you're the people doing the bit, right? Whether this was safe or not. That's their discussion. Not to mention, Cody chose to do that. He wasn't forced into it. In fact, it was his concept and it was his idea. But to then undermine the whole thing by reassuring everybody that it's fake, so to speak, it was a completely, now it wasted the sacrifice that Cody made for the moment, and it completely destroyed whatever could have been created out of it. And I know it's may seem counterintuitive to maybe quite a few people out there, but that's why there are those of us building and creating these things, and then those of us that just consume it. And it's really difficult to craft these shows and these matches and to try and make a moment that has emotional content and does feel magical to people. And that's hard to understand, but it's easier to sit back and criticize. And, you know, don't get me wrong, criticism is necessary for the process, but ultimately you got to create separation between the two. I think ultimately to actually deliver the best enjoyment to the fan base that's watching.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of the challenge, you know, that promoters will have, or bookers or whatever, to appeal to a 2024 audience that is in a different kind of headspace than you would have been 20 years prior. You have to learn how to blur that line. I love that answer, but just, you know, so people don't know. And that's the key, because that's how you're going to get them to keep coming back. That's the whole point of pro wrestling and MMA and everything else.
Exactly. And I don't see that there's no better way to do it. And it, you know, whoever sees the transcription of this or listens to this, you know, I know there's going to be some fans that are going to get, you know, maybe insulted by the concept of what I'm saying here, but ultimately it's having those conversations, the mystery, the constant reaching for that understanding, for wanting more, that's something that pulls you, that gives you will and vitality towards the thing it is that you're doing. And I don't want these shows to deliver any less than their absolute best to someone, to that person that really wants to watch them. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want anyone to be able to sit back and watch a match and go, okay, this part is, it's fun, I'll clap, but it doesn't matter because the finish isn't until this point. And I can tell you when that is, I don't want that whatsoever. You know, we don't, people are not slapping their legs in blood sport. That is something I say, no, that is, you do not do that. You start, you leg slap, you're gone. Don't do it. Because I need this to come off as raw and legitimate as possible, because I really want to suspend people's disbelief, and I want to, I really want to get to their heart and their stomachs about this, not all up in their head.
I like that. We're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. First question, what's your favorite thing that pro wrestling took from MMA?
You know, that's the only way I could answer that is MMA is pro wrestling. It didn't take anything from it. It was born out of it. And I would say that it's impossible not to be, because at their roots, it's about conflict and combat in the ring between driven and individualistic competitors. So
anything stylistically at all or anything like that?
No, I don't see MMA as real. I mean, MMA is pro wrestling. So it's like asking me, what did pro wrestling get from pro wrestling?
So I guess that kind of kills my second question then, which would be your favorite thing that MMA took from pro wrestling. But it's interesting too, but just because the styles evolve over time too. You
know, I mean, the styles are one thing, but it's really not about that. I mean, the at its core, it's the same thing. It is the same thing. I think that the pride model of presentation for MMA is the best one, where it has more of the pro wrestling pomp and circumstance, but it also has a very international Olympic F1 kind of event feel to it. But sometimes the grimiest, you know, if the walkways were lit with like flaming torches, and like there's a bare knuckle MMA event in Poland called WOTOR, WOTOR, looks cool. And on their first event, they had signs where they would paint on the names of the next athletes and put them up there. I mean, that was pretty cool. And fighting in this circular ring and headbutting each other and all this, but it had like this torch lit looking arena with scant fans in the audience. It, you know, looked like a full on like underground type of fight thing. That was pretty cool. So, you know, there's a lot of space in there to build something, but ultimately it has to have personality. It's got to have some kind of magic to it, some sort of spirit behind what it is. Otherwise, you know, it just comes off as product. And, you know, that's that. I didn't become a fan of professional wrestling because I wanted to watch product, merchandise, and hashtag. I became a fan because it was magical. And to see guys like the Road Warriors on screen and be like, wow, you know, holy moly, this is an example of something that is beyond your normal everyday person you might run into on the street.
The real second question now that we changed my other one was, you did a great job on commentary with Jim Ross and with Mauro Ranallo on Japan on Access. Did you enjoy doing that? Would you be interested in doing it on other levels in pro wrestling?
Yes, I did enjoy it quite a bit. I got to learn a lot from Mauro Ranallo, and that was really easy also because we've been buddies for a long time. I remember when he first stepped in to do commentary on Pride, I was massively impressed with his work, and we immediately had created a rapport and had a whole bunch of friends in the pro wrestling side of things too. So that helped out a lot. But then, you know, I knew Jim Ross before working with him, but we hadn't really spent a whole ton of time together. So being able to sit at his side and learn and just be next to him and pick up on the things he's doing there. And between the two, they've got two very different styles. I just felt like I got two different masterclasses in how to be play-by-play guys And I can do play-by-play or color, although usually I'm going to be brought in as a color guy because of my background. But I really enjoy doing the commentary work. And, you know, I always saw it as my job was to delineate who's the heel, who's the face, and to protect and elevate whatever is going on in that ring. And I don't want, even to the point of not, if something is miscued or what, covering it with reality. And not trying to allow the product to fall into not trying to allow these matches to fall into things that are critiqued and pulled apart at their, you could almost say, like material level, like without any magic behind, without it, like destroying the mystery behind it. I just want to keep people involved as much as possible. I don't want them thinking about, oh yeah, that move was botched and this was that. And it's like, oh, no, it's just a match. Anything can happen. You always in a fight, you hope every punch is a knockout, but the reality is a few will be. So you're throwing lots of them, trying to find that opportunity to score, to cause that damage, to actually hit that spot that's going to put his lights out. But there is this whole struggle in doing that. Because obviously your opponent's not going to let you. And with that, maybe a punch misses or doesn't hit correctly, or you end up breaking your hand, any number of things, or you get taken down. And now you're unable to employ your striking game on the feet. So you got to figure out a way to get back up and to be able to get back on that pathway because you think that's your best option towards winning in this match. It's not about, oh, well, you know, they, you know, missed this something driver. That's not the point of pro wrestling. Oh, he didn't hit his special move before he hit his finish. It's not about that.
Right.
And that's my job, is to keep people away from that kind of thing and to really invigorate what's the person watching this thing into really buying into it and to believing in what they see in the moment.
Well, you did a great job, and I think you would too with the, you know, even some of the historical stuff with New Japan because of your connection that you were able to bring also. And then the last question for the three count, you can cross over any two wrestlers or fighters of the past to compete in Bloodsport. Who would it be and why?
Volkan Akira Maeda.
And
why? Do you know who these guys are? I mean, Volkan is – I mean, these two – particular guys are two of my absolute favorites, and two people that I have relationships with. So I'm a little biased, but Volkan was just so effortless in the ring and his grappling and submission expertise, and just how he would take any moment of contact and make it one where everyone's holding their breath. That's amazing to do such a thing, to have everyone on the edge of their seats just because you get a hold of somebody's hand. Yeah. That's pretty powerful. And with Maeda, he's just brutality, meanness, and just dynamism all wrapped up into one thing. You just knew that he was explosive, that he could be on just these receiving end of such an onslaught. And out of nowhere, he'll just come back around and just absolutely bury somebody. Beautiful suplexes, incredible kicks, and just viciousness in his approach towards his opponents and towards his matches. I developed myself as a wrestler, especially early on, was in a lot of ways a bit of an homage to Akira Maeda.
Very, very good. Well, Josh Barnett, GCW Bloodsport 10, Penn's Landing Cater is April 4th on Triller TV Plus. I'm really glad I got the opportunity to do this with you today, and I really appreciate the time and all the best with that event. It sounds like you said it's sold out, and you know, people can watch it on Triller TV Plus now. So
yes.
Thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And, you know, we have all the keys, all the pieces to create something great. And so that's up to us now to deliver.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me this week on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank Josh Barnett for joining me this week. Bloodsport 10, April 4th, Triller TV Plus. Also want to thank Owen Phillips from Triller for helping set this up. Follow me on Twitter at Under the Ring for all the latest guest announcements, and have a great week, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.